about giving life to your children. And this is something that actually the whole church can do. And I was reading, this is one book. I love books, and I only brought a teeny tiny fraction I wanted to because we'd be here morning. But this book, I know the Women's Ministry had recommended everyone read it. If you didn't get to read it that year, you still can read it. Mm-hmm. I didn't read it that year, but I read it this summer. Highly recommend. One point that Nancy brings up is that women, only women have the privilege to bear life. Only women. Only God. God in his wisdom gave that privilege only to women. The world believes that the ability to carry babies is a liability, just like children are a liability. If we as older women want to teach younger women to love their children, we should start by encouraging them to welcome children in the first place as a blessing. The world believes humans should have the ultimate control over a woman's ability to bear life, which is why abortion exists. My body, my choice, right? Wrong. 1 Corinthians 6:19 through 20 says you were bought with a price, so glorify God in your body. Psalm 24 says the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof and those who dwell therein. Whether you acknowledge it or not, your body belongs to God. He made it. He sustains it. He chooses what it's like. We have been led to believe that our body is ours to do as we please, especially when it comes to whether or not to have babies. Now, God in his goodness has given us knowledge of how to prevent conception in righteous ways. But do we have the right perspective on it? And God, in his bitter providence, sometimes denies us the privilege of bearing children no matter how much we want. But do we have the right perspective on it? Is our perspective on giving life one centered on ourselves, our desires, comfort, and our very limited knowledge of the future? Or is our perspective one of complete dependence on God for every breath, every conception, every baby, or lack thereof? Does our attitude toward bearing children mimic that of the world? Our attitude should be decidedly, unapologetically different. Jesus came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And is this not what also mothers are called to do? To serve and give our life, even our bodies. Now there's much about bearing children that is glorious. It is a privilege to be able to grow a human inside of you. I've done it 8 times, and every time I'm amazed. I'm just like, how in the world is this possible? And at the end, I'm like, there's a baby. Eric's always like, what did you think it was? I'm like, it's just so amazing. There are so many things that have to go right for a child to come into this world. Oh, yes. That we should be praising God every time one comes, because it is a miracle. But it does come at a cost. Pregnancy, though amazing, in this broken world, changes many things about your body, both during and after and forever on this earth. But even as our children grow, we are still laying down our life to give them life. Greater love has no one than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. I read a story once about a woman who was standing in front of a mirror on Easter, frustrated. She couldn't find anything to wear that looked nice. She was 2 weeks from having a baby, and her husband came up behind her and said, I see no more fitting way to spend Resurrection Sunday than in a body broken on behalf of another. That's the attitude we should have. We want to be Christian women, old and younger, known for our love for our children. So let's not join the world with their eye rolls and commiserating over the hardships of raising and bearing children. Let's not join the world in their pity parties of how mothers lose themselves in motherhood. And let's not run with the world on a quest for self-care at the cost of our families. Don't let each other believe the world's false wisdom on children. Let's be known for our love for children. Let's cultivate a culture, and we're all familiar with Psalm 127, children are a blessing from the Lord, a heritage, the fruit of the womb is a reward. That's God's standard. So let's cultivate a culture where children are seen as gifts that they are, starting before they were born. And perhaps instead of asking ourselves, when should we welcome a child, maybe we should ask God to give us his heart for children and be willing to welcome children, even when it may look foolish to the world. When Eric and I started having kids, when I got pregnant with Josh, Eric was still in college, and we were 20. I was 23, he was 22. We hadn't even been married for 2 years, and many people, even in the church, said we were foolish to not have spent years getting to know each other as a couple in marriage, that we were foolish to get married when Eric didn't have a stable job yet, or not to get married, to have a baby. And you know what? Those comments came from non-believers and believers all the way throughout. Somewhere around child 3 or 4, we just are like, we expect it, we ignore it. Depending on who it's coming from, it still stings. But we should be a church that is known for our love
for children. And that's why, one of the reasons our church supports New Life Family Services, because children are a blessing, whether they come right when you wanted them to come on that perfect birth month, when they're a blessing when the news of a pregnancy is met with trauma and sorrow. They're still a blessing because God doesn't make mistakes. At our old church, they used to say on dedication day, children are a blessing when they're smiling and cute and sitting on their mom's lap, and they're a blessing when they're screaming unconsolable at 3 a.m. They're a blessing when they come with 10 fingers and 10 toes, and they're a blessing when they come with a congenital heart disorder. They are a blessing. Sometimes we don't understand God's ways, right? His ways are not our ways. Okay, that was supposed to be just a little caveat, but I have 3 points, three just little tidbits I was gonna share. One, the first one's called, and I love alliteration, guys, so it's the three R's: savor the season, sing while sacrificing, and speak about our Savior. So first one, savor the season. Every season, because none of them last.
As us, real quick.
Yes, well, even the teens, it felt like, if 1 year ago I was saying to Josh, you have 1 year left, 1 year left here, and it felt like a long time, and it wasn't. Okay, this is a poem that I heard a long time ago, people might be familiar with. It's called Song for a Fifth Child by Ruth Hulbert Hamilton, which is ironic because Ruth is my fifth child. That's not why I named her that. Oh, mother, mother, come dust, come shake out your cloth, empty the dustpan, poison the moth, hang out the washing, make up the bread, sew on a button, butter the bread. Where is the mother whose house is so shocking? She's up in the nursery, blissfully rocking. Oh, I've grown as shiftless as little boy blue, lullaby, rockaby, lullaby loo. Dishes are waiting and bills are past due, pat a cake, darling, and peek, peekaboo. The shopping's not done and there's nothing for stew. Out in the yard, there's a hullabaloo. But I'm playing Kanga, and this is my Roo. Look, aren't her eyes the most wonderful hue? Lullaby, rockaby, lullaby loo. The cleaning and scrubbing can wait till tomorrow, but children grow up, as I've learned to my sorrow. So quiet down, cobwebs, dust, go to sleep. I'm rocking my baby, and babies don't keep. Now, I don't want this to fall into sappy sentimentalism, but recognizing and remembering that life has seasons and that the way things are now are not how they will always be. That someday your children won't be little. They won't even be in your home. And you'll never have those years and days again. Recognizing and remembering that is wisdom. Psalm 90:12 says, "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." John 9:4 says, "We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work." And what is the work we mothers need to do? Enjoy your children. Mm-hmm. Your children are not inconveniences, though oftentimes the care of them, the care that they require, is inconvenient. When I was, just a side note, I was at a wedding for a dear, dear friend of ours. I was pregnant with Ruthie, and Lydia was 1 year old. It was not convenient to have a toddler at a wedding. I missed the entire thing because she had a potty accident all over me. And then she screamed because it was her nap time. But it wasn't convenient. But that doesn't mean she was an inconvenience. Your children are not burdens, though the amount of responsibility on a mother that a mother can feel burdensome. Your children are a gift, and they are to be enjoyed. These gifts are not possessions to be polished, but persons who are precious. So can I encourage you to enjoy your children? And I just wrote down some ways that I... they can help me remember to enjoy my children, to slow down and look in their eyes. I'm just as guilty as anyone, but put the phone down, out of the room, because your children know when you're not paying attention to them. Even the teens, especially the teens. Get on the floor and just be with them, play with them, create together. Go outside and follow their lead. I went outside recently with Abby and said, "Go, I'll follow you." And she walked to the water tower, because she thought that was so neat. And she said, "Don't you just like to sit here and look at this?" "No, I don't. But I like to be with you." Listen to the music they love. I found this increasingly difficult as my kids got older. Although there were some teeny bopper Bible songs that I listened to way too many times. Let them tell you about their dreams. Tuck them in, sometimes even when they're teens. Hi, Mary.
It's okay.
It's okay. share a problem with them and ask them their advice on what to do. This can be very humorous when they're 5 years old, and it can actually be very instructive and helpful when they're 18. Invite them to join you in your activities. It is hilarious when I'm trying to do a workout video and my kids join along. Spend time getting to know them so you can enjoy them. So you can enjoy them. Relax and learn who they are as a person, as opposed to just managing and directing them. My word, my day is spent up so much of like, wash your hands, put that on the table, walk over there, say you're sorry, all those directives. Sometimes we need to just put the director cap down and get to know them as people. Make sure they know you enjoy them, not for what they've done, are doing, or will do, but for who they are, who God has made them to be, and who God is making them. I'm going to read another thing. I had a saying that I heard a long time ago that I just love. And way a long time ago, in my early years, so we lived here for a while, then we moved to Ohio for 3 years. And while I was there, I had a blog to keep in touch, and my tagline on my blog was, long are the days, short are the years, which is so true, because people would say, like, oh, enjoy it, it goes so fast, and sometimes you're thinking, when all the kids are throwing up, and you're so tired, you're like, it's just not going by fast enough. But it, the days are long, the years are short. So this is something I wrote on my blog. 12 years ago. To give you a background, I had 4 kids, 7 and under. I had a 6-week-old newborn. Eric was working a demanding job at a plant. He worked 12 to 14-hour shifts, sometimes with an extra shift in the night, just for fun, 7 days a week. He was going on 41 days without a day off. I wrote, I lift my eyes up. I lift my eyes up to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. Psalm 121, 1 through 2. For these past weeks, this verse has played over and over and over in my brain. I have been so overwhelmed with the daily dealings of our home life right now. Yet where does my help come from? The Lord Jesus, sweet, sweet Jesus. Of course, as much as I'd love it, he hasn't been able to bodily pop in and give me a hand with diapers and homeschooling. He hasn't performed a miracle that allows Eric to suddenly have 2 weeks vacation or at least weekends off again. He hasn't sent some saint knocking at my door, begging to clean my house and cook all the meals. But he's certainly been our helper. Some of the ways he's been carrying us through this time aren't even tangible. As I sit here, I realize there's no actual way to write about what he's done in our home, and in particular, in me. But sure, we've been reminded of verses. We've had calls from friends at just the right time. We've had little ones take extra long naps on days I thought I would snap. But it's deeper, and it's more. I can't explain, except for one thing. Whenever I think of the above verse, if I can, I look out of the windows to the actual hills I see, and I pray. I love that, and with the view from here, a lot of hills can be seen. So there I was, praying that verse, gazing out at the Appalachian hills that surround our home, ignoring the crying and screaming and mess that lay behind me, and I felt the Holy Spirit whisper this, lift your eyes up. And I understood. A large part of the anger, impatience, and irritation I felt in this trial has to do with the fact that so many things are disorganized. I thrive on routine and order and plans. Our life is the opposite of that now. However, I also love being at home and loving on my little ones and enjoying a slow pace of life. Our life could be that right now. I just need to lift my eyes up. I need to lift them above the toys on the unvacuumed, unswept floors. I need to lift them up above the piles of unfolded laundry and unopened mail. I need to lift them up above the books I want to read and the fancy food I want to bake. And when I do, what I see is amazing. The eyes of my children, all looking at me, waiting to have the undivided attention of a smiling mother. They could care less about everything else, as long as they have me. At this point in my life, I can't give them a neat, organized household, but I can give them me. All I have to do is lift up my eyes and keep them there, which is harder sometimes than it sounds. So that was the first. Enjoy your children. Hold on. Make sure I have okay, sing while sacrificing. Hebrews 13:5 says that we are to give a sacrifice of praise. Hebrews 12:2 says, for the joy that was set before him, Jesus endured the cross. So Jeanette Matson, who I know a lot of you guys know, told me, and she had 7 kids, also an awesome lady. Jeanette Matson told me once of a time that she was overwhelmed with her duties as a mother and trying to get lunch on the table, and the noise of hungry children felt like too much. But rather than giving into a pity party, she began to sing a hymn. From then on, she incorporated singing into her mothering. Now, no one would argue that sacrifice is a big part of motherhood. The act of bearing children is in and of itself a tremendous sacrifice. And for those whose children have come by way of adoption, the process can be overwhelming and obnoxiously intrusive. Mothers give up a lot before there's ever a baby anywhere near our arms. But in most cases, the sacrifice is endured joyfully because we know what, Lord willing, is coming, a child. Yet we grow weary because the sacrifices keep coming and coming and coming. They come in the middle of the night when a little one just needs mom to sleep. They come while we're using the bathroom because they need something they can't find, like you're going to find it while you're sitting on the toilet. They come just as we sit down to eat, when you have to leave your food to go help settle an argument or help someone cut their meat. Yes, they even come on Christmas, Mother's Day, and your birthday. The sacrifices are real, but can I encourage you to sing while sacrificing? So there is a verse. I'm going to read it from here because then I'm going to read something from here. Zephaniah 3:17 says, "The Lord thy God in the midst of thee is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over thee with sing with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with singing." So this is just a book by Doug Wilson. I like a lot of their stuff. He writes, "So sacrifices you will make over for your children should be something you can sing over. If there's not a song in it, it is not a biblical sacrifice. Without a song, it is a poor me, look at the martyr go sacrifice, and those kinds of sacrifices have a very poor return. You are not just supposed to sing over your children." This is funny, there's music while I'm singing. God has a sense of humor. "You are not just supposed to sing over your children when they are being adorable, asleep in their beds, when you can have peace with them since they are not misbehaving at the moment. Life is messier than that, and the whole thing, including the mess, should be met with song. The delight that we are imitating is an unrealistic delight. This kind of delight takes into account the world as it is, and even so, it rejoices. You sing over your children when you are sacrificing for them, when you are taking the hit for them, and when they have no idea what you are giving up for them." And that is something that I think you learn more and more about. We give up a lot for our kids as they're little, but I think I'm seeing even more and more as adults, raising adult children, what you give up for them. excuse me. I think, mothers, sorry, I thought I tabbed this one, but I didn't. Emma, do you have your phone? Could you look up Ecclesiastes 5:19 for me? I think is important what our words are. And sometimes it helps to just speak them out loud to kids. Oftentimes when my kids throw up, when I'm cleaning them up, because it is a struggle for me to have to deal with some of those messes, I will audibly say to them, "Mama loves to help you clean up." I don't love to be thrown up on. I don't love to clean up vomit, but I can say, "Mama loves to help you when you're sick. Mama loves to be the one who's here for you. Mama loves you more than I love being able to be with a friend, being able to sleep." Because it's true. And if it's not true, then we need to pray and ask God to make that true in our hearts. And also our expressions. I have done many sacrificing of smiles through gritted teeth, but it's still better than a brown scowl at my kids when they need me to sacrifice on their behalf. Even just recently, you know, Josh came home last week. It was his first week home, and it was his birthday, and we had so much things planned, and our family was sick. And I so selfishly wanted to just say, "Just come and stay. It will be fine." Yeah. But we had to sacrifice and say, "No, you stay away, and we'll send you what you need and borrow you a car, and we'll wave to you by the end of the driveway." But we do it because we love them, right? And also singing. I think it helps to have something to sing in the hard moments. Psalm 118:24. "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." I remember very many times, there was one time in particular where Mari fell into a patch of poison ivy while I was cleaning her up. Sophie had an accident. She was a baby, all over herself. And at the same time, I realized I was burning dinner. And then at the same time, Josh came in, he had gotten stung by a bee. It was incredibly overwhelming. And I remember starting to sing that song, which was a verse song I taught my kids, and singing it over and realizing that I was getting really loud at the part that said, "Let us rejoice and be glad in this," because I needed to hear it. But to have the song, like, this is my go-to song when what I feel like doing is grumbling and complaining, I'm going to sing this verse over my kids. Emma, do you have the verse? Yeah.
I think everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them, and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is a gift of God.
Sometimes we need God to ask us for the gift of being able to enjoy our kids. Sometimes it can be really difficult. There are some ways we must sacrifice. Once you are growing that baby, you can't say, I don't want to have stretch marks. I don't want to have swelled feet. It just comes, whether you like it or not. That there are some ways that we can choose to sacrifice by putting aside our desires, our wants, our demands aside. I remember a friend told me once, sleep is a privilege, it's not a right. And oh, how I bristled at that. I'm like, are you kidding me? God made me to need sleep. He made me to need food. He made me to need that. But he's going to give them to you when you need them. God always gives us and provides. And I found that sometimes when I think I need them, but God is calling me to other things, it turns out that it was a privilege that he's withholding for me for some reason. I can't demand sleep. I can't. And I just need to be thankful for when I have it. So it's not a have to. We get to sacrifice for our children. And like the verse says, we just pray that when our toil is done, we won't remember the toil and the sacrifice for the joy that will fill our hearts. And we can practice that by enjoying our children, singing while sacrificing over them now. But we can pray. One of the questions I had written down, and some of these reflection questions came up while I was reading this. They're the reflection ones, not the ones. But the what makes it hard to enjoy your children? Because it's really easy to enjoy them when they're all cute and clean and saying funny things and entertaining. It is wonderful. And I'm glad God gives us those moments. But sometimes there is a certain child that just always seems to rub you the wrong way, either because you can't understand them or they're too much like you. And oftentimes it's that one that you always seem to butt heads with. Sometimes it's hard to enjoy them when they're so different. Sometimes I found that it's hard for me to enjoy my kids because they are getting in the way of my desires for enjoyment in another area. And so like I read from the blog post, I really enjoyed having a smooth running household that was organized and clean and in order. I mean, not insanely clean, but you know, at least I could walk across the room and not trip over things, sort of clean, and that the laundry was folded. Like, I felt like it wasn't too much to ask. But my desire to be able to enjoy that was getting my way of enjoying what I did have, which was my children. So sometimes it's on us. Okay, I think that was the last one of that. Last one. Speak about our Savior. We're all familiar with 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 3. That if I have not love, I am a clanging cymbal. And 3 John 1 through 1, 4. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. So as mothers, we have 1,001 opportunities daily to share the gospel with our children. The greatest love we can show our kids is to point them to Jesus. Mercifully, God made sharing the gospel incredibly accessible. Yes, there are family devotions, bedtime Bible times, Sunday school, church, children's programs, all wonderful things. But one of the very best ways a mother can love her children is just simply by talking about Jesus. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. That seems like all day. This needn't be complicated, but it must be consistent and constant. Don't assume kids understand or remember. I remember when we had Sophia, we had her at home. So there's a lot of questions from Josh about how did the baby get in there? How was she getting out? Why is there blood? He had a lot of questions, and we tried to explain to him in age-appropriate ways what was going on. When I had Lydia at home again, he asked the same questions, and Eric said, how can you not remember? We've already went over this. Partly because we didn't really love having to give this talk again. But you know what? They don't remember. And they don't remember sometimes the things that we tell them about Jesus. They need to hear it over and over and over again, just like we do, because we are forgetful people and we forget. God can be trusted. Jesus is our friend. We need Jesus. When I am afraid, I will trust in you, God. We have a little poster at our house of toddler truths, and they are that simple. We need Jesus. Jesus is our friend. Those have ministered to me so incredibly much, even as an adult. And sometimes my kids use them to minister to me either. You need Jesus, Mom. Like, you are right. Or I'll say even something as little as like, oh, I'm afraid the cookies aren't baked quite right. Don't be afraid. When you're afraid, you need to trust in God. So you can't ever talk too much about Jesus. We can nag our kids and get on them and talk way too much about other things, but you can never talk too much about Jesus. Instead of telling our kids how great they are, tell them how great God is. This is one thing. Our culture is so like, tell your kids how wonderful they are, how great they are. Don't do that. Tell them how wonderful it is that God gave them the ability to be able to shoot a basketball. God gave you the ability to play that instrument. Isn't it wonderful that God gave you this day that you were able to do this? That is a gift. Saturate them with Bible knowledge so that when the squeeze of suffering comes, and it will come, they will pour out faith and biblical trust. A pastor at our old church used to take a sponge at one of the parenting classes and dip it into a bowl of water that was labeled Bible knowledge. And he pulled it out and he says, the squeeze of suffering will come. And you squeeze it. When it comes, you want them to just drip out Bible. And be diligent to faithfully share the gospel, knowing you can trust him with the fruit. Jessica Cunningham has been a great encouragement to me to remind me that your job is to be faithful. God's job is what the fruit will look like. Sometimes the fruit is wonderful and sweet and awesome, and you get these moments where you're just like, yes. We have, when I was going through one of the miscarriages, Josh was 4, and I remember kneeling on the floor and telling him the baby died, and God decided to take the baby home, and Mom was sad. And he said to me, Mama, why are you sad? This is great. The baby's with Jesus. Satan can never hurt our baby again. And he was so happy. It was such a blessing to my heart. He understood, as time went on, I was sad. But that's what came out of him, because that's what we had, by God's grace, been putting into him. Even up until last August, shortly before Josh left, Eric and I were getting an argument. We're sinners too. We were having an argument, and we were both being very stubborn-headed about it. And we both kind of walked out of the room. Josh had to leave, and I went outside on the porch, and I get a text from my son rebuking me for my attitude towards my husband with Bible verses and just a very gentle admonition. Mom, you have taught me this. Now you need to read it yourself. Boy, was that humbling. And of course, at first I'm like, you are just a kid. You don't know about... No, he was right. I went back inside after a while, and Eric was sitting there crying at the table, and he said, you wouldn't believe the text I got from Josh. The same thing, only Josh addressing Eric's part of the argument. We made up really fast and prayed to thank God for that fruit, because it was very sweet. And it's sweet to be able to be rebuked by your son in such a biblical way. However, there are times when the fruit is not sweet. It does not look at all what we imagined, and it is very discouraging. There's been times with my kids that I think, how can you be like this? You were taught differently over and over. You're old enough to know better. And it is really discouraging as a mom to have to deal with that. Our pastor, I once heard a story of this mother who had diligently tried to teach her children about Jesus, and they all followed the Lord except one. She was adamantly against the Lord, hostile towards the gospel. And this mother died without this child ever coming to faith. And she just kept faithfully praying for her daughter, praying for God, praying for her daughter. That daughter came to faith at a Sunday school class that the pastor was teaching when she was 84 years old. And wouldn't her mother be rejoicing? But she never lived to see that fruit. And we need to just trust sometimes that the fruit might look rotten. It might look really funny. But we need to just keep faithfully plodding along, because our call is to be faithful, God, and let God be responsible with the fruit. Just don't give up. And one thing, this aside, just the way that we have talked about Jesus a lot, especially with little ones, is to always say, God made that. God did that. I'm talking about that. And so the kids, the first truth they know is God made that. God did that. And just a funny story. We were driving in a big city once, and Mari was about 3, and Josh was probably about 5 or 6. And Mari piped out, look at all those cars that God made. And, we're just saying the trees God made and the sun God made. And Joshy goes, Mari, God did not make those cars. And she said, yes, he did. She was so confident. Yes, he did. God made everything. I know that. And so God made those cars. And because he's a firstborn and likes to be correct, no, he did not make those cars. A man made those cars. So she sat there and thought. And so she said, yeah, well, who do you think made the wood to give to that man to make those cars? While the details were a little incorrect, her biblical knowledge was right on. Who did give God the metal to make those cars? Who gave God, or who gave man, the idea to make those cars? She was right, and just that all that was starting with was God made everything. You can take one simple biblical truth, and it can be applied infinite. And last thing that I think we all know but need to be reminded of, I'm very guilty of needing to be reminded of this because I fail, pray for them. Pray for them every day. And when I was younger, I could spend a lot of time praying for my kids. Sometimes now, as I'm falling into bed exhausted, it's like, God bless Josh. God, please bless Mari. God, please bless Sophie. I don't think it detracts that I pray the same thing for them all. But to pray for them each by name every day, if you can. Sometimes Eric and I could pray together for them in our busy season of life. That doesn't happen nearly as much as we want to. But we can always pray for them. And I always think it's important that they know you're praying for them. Not to be showy like Jesus warns against, but so that they know you really care about them and you really love them. And my parents are not Christians, but my grandmother was. And it was important to me, especially once I left my house and became an independent adult in college and getting married, that she would remind me, I am praying for you. Because we don't ever outgrow our need for prayer. And also so that they would know that you're praying for them. Ask them what you want prayer for. Sometimes it's kind of funny. You know, some of the things that little kids can ask for prayer for. Would you pray that my sister would just stop looking at me in the car? Okay, there's things to pray for both of you in there. Sometimes it's insightful. And your kid, by asking them, what can I pray for about for you? They can open up about what they want. One very humbling time, I asked one of my daughters, what should I be praying about for you? She said, could you pray that mom and dad would get along this week? Ouch. She didn't have the words to say that our bickering over something that had lasted the whole week was bothering her. And quite honestly, I didn't even know she knew. We weren't fighting and yelling. We were being snippy with each other because we had an unresolved issue. And she knew. And she couldn't say to us, like an 18-year-old would, but she knew enough to say, could you pray for that? She wasn't trying to rebuke me. That was her heart. But the rebuke was very effective. For them to know that mom prays for them, that's powerful, and it means a lot to them, especially as they grow older and leave. Josh knows I'm praying for him, and he will send me prayer requests, but even if he didn't, and things that he doesn't ask for prayer for, that's, you can bet what I'm praying for. And even beyond safety, physical safety, finding friends for any of my kids, to pray for their spiritual salvation. But I think prayer is the one of the best. That's all the three points I have, and I think that gives us enough to have discussion on. The other thing I was going to, I'm not going to read the excerpt from here, but has anyone read this book besides me?
I have the first one.
Yeah, The Loving the Little Years.
That's really good.
I was telling Jenny, I really like how Rachel Jankovic writes. She's a really great writer, but she's a very humble writer and I read a lot of these chapters and you think, ouch, that hurt in a spot I was hoping no one would notice or I couldn't even articulate. But she is a really good writer. The chapters are short. I highly recommend this book. And I even told Jenny, like, if we wanted to get together casually, we could read aloud a chapter in 10 minutes and discuss it. It's just really good. And I have one more story I want to read. I'm going to warn you, I have never been able to read this story without crying. So I will do my best. Just as a funny aside, an old pastor of ours read this story to us when Josh was 2, and it meant a lot to me then. It means so much more to me in this season of my life. I tried to read the story without crying, and I told Eric, I don't know if I can read it. He knows, though. It's kind of an iconic story in between him and me. And he's like, you got to read it, but just take a deep breath and just read it. It's not a big deal. So I said, okay. And at dinner that night, I said, honey, why don't you try to read the story to the kids? Because they've never heard it. Why don't you read it? See if you can do it. He's, yeah, sure, no problem. He could not get through it without crying. At first he's like, no, it's fine. I just, it's just real hot in here. And he could not get through it either. So he handed it back to me and said, I think you should read it, but good luck. So, I tried to read it to Sophie last night. I still couldn't, so bear with me. But it's called Run, Tammy, Run. And for those of you who don't know, there's a little part of it that is a little bit more applicable to our family because our kids run cross-country. And this is about a cross-country running, but you don't need to have any connection to that. Okay, so when I first heard it, Josh, he was two. I have a dear friend who lives in Dallas, and he has a daughter who is a very talented runner. The regional cross-country championships were held in my town, and he called to ask if I could pick up his wife from the airport and give her a place to stay while she was there to watch her their daughter run. I was delighted to do it, and so I found myself on Saturday morning witnessing the Texas regional cross-country races at May Simmons Park. I was there providentially, having had no plans or even thoughts about going until my friend called. I witnessed something there, a wonderful moving thing, a thing of beauty worth telling and retelling. It was a marvelously bright, clear, cool morning, and hundreds of spectators had gathered on the hillsides to watch. They were mostly family members who had traveled hundreds of miles, in some cases, to watch just one race. I had no child running, so I often found myself watching those who did. Their faces were intent, their eyes always picking out the one runner they were interested in, and often, when the runners were far away and could not hear their shouts of encouragement, still their lips would move, mouthing the precious, familiar names and one other word. Sometimes they said the names audibly but softly, as if for no ears but their own, and yet it seemed that they hoped to be heard. "Run, Jimmy," they whispered urgently. "Run, Tracy, run." The cross-country race is 2 miles for girls, 3 for boys. It is a grueling, physically and mentally exhausting run over hills and rough terrain. There were 10 races that morning, beginning with Class 1A boys and girls and ending with Class 5 boys and girls. Each race had from 80 to 120 competitors. The course ended where it began, and at times the runners were nearly a half a mile away. As a Class 5A girls race came to a close, I watched a 40-plus-year-old mother wearing patent leather shoes and a skirt, carrying a purse, run the last 100 yards beside her daughter. She saw no other runners. As she ran, awkwardly, stumbling, her long dark hair coming undone and streaming out behind her, giving no thought to the spectacle she made, she cried, "Run, Tammy, run! Run, Tammy, run!" There were hundreds of people crowding in, shouting and screaming. But this mother was determined to be heard. "Run, Tammy, run! Run, Tammy, run!" she pleaded. The girl had no chance to win, and the voice of her mother, whose heart was bursting with exertion and emotion, was not urging her to win. She was urging her to finish. The girl was in trouble. Her muscles were cramping. Her breath came in ragged gasps. Her stride was broken, faltering. She was in the last stages of weariness, just before collapse. But when she heard her mother's voice, a marvelous transformation took place. She straightened. She found her balance, her bearing, her rhythm, and she finished. She crossed the finish line, turned, and collapsed into the arms of her mother. They fell down together on the grass, and they cried, and then they laughed, and they were having the best time together, like there was no one else in the world but them. "God," I thought, "that is beautiful. Thank you for letting me see that." As I drove away from May Simmons Park, I couldn't get it off my mind. A whole morning of outstanding performances had merged into a single happening. I thought of my own children, and of a race they are running, a different one, a far more important one, a race which requires even greater stamina, courage, and character. I am a spectator in that race also. I have helped them train. I have pleaded, instructed, threatened, punished, prayed, praised, laughed, and cried. I have even tried to familiarize them with the course. But now the gun is up, and their race has begun, and I am a spectator. My heart is bursting. I do not see the other runners. Sometimes their course takes them far from me, and yet I whisper, "Run, children, run." They do not hear, but there is one who does. Occasionally they grow weary because the race is long and demands such sacrifice. They witness hypocrisy, and of course there are so many voices which call them to quit this foolish race because they cannot win. They lose sight of their goal, and they falter, and they stumble, and I cry, "Run, children, run. Oh, God, please help them run." And the last 100 yards, how I long to be there beside them. "Run, Josh, run. Run, Mari, run. Run, Sophie, run." But what if I'm gone, and there is no one to whisper, to shout run in their ears? What if Satan convinces them that they are not going to win? What if his great lie that you must beat the others causes them to allow defeat to settle over them? What if they lose sight of the great truth that in this race it is finishing that is the victory? And that is why our Lord Jesus says at the last, it is finished. And the great apostle Paul says, I have finished my course. O God, hear my prayer. When their time of doubt comes, if they cannot hear my voice, if I must watch from beyond, dear Lord Jesus, as you have run beside me, please run beside them. Strengthen their knees that they might finish. And dear Father, when they cross that eternal finish line, may I be there to welcome them home. May we laugh and cry through eternity, praising the grace which gave us this victory. Run, Tammy, run. See, I couldn't do it.
Neither could anybody else.
I think that is a great picture illustration. He said, I heard it when Josh was little, and hearing it now, and the parts that he is far away from me. And our kids, that's what they're meant to do, right? It is a huge blessing that when our children grow up and become adults and go out to find and follow God's purpose for their life, it's not without its pain, as I'm learning, but it's a success. The problem is they're still running that race. They're still our children. We can't be there to carry them and cheer them on always. We want to start when they're little, knowing, teaching them that they're on this race and being that person running beside them so that when we can no longer run, whether it's because they're gone away from us or because we're gone, that they will still be running that race. And I also think this is a very poignant call to other women in the church who's not necessarily the mother of this child, but there might be a mother somewhere who is praying for that child, that we as other women can step into their lives to encourage them to keep running, finish the race. I told Eric, when I see a college kid now sitting at our church by himself, boy, do I have a different view of him now. And I think God put those kinds of people in my kids' lives when they leave, when they're adults, that will encourage them to keep running. Put those kinds of people in my kids' lives right now when they're little, that will encourage them. It's all well and good to get to know a little kid and talk to them about how cute their dress is on Sunday, but if we could encourage them in real things, that's a boost to their mothers, and that's a boost to them, and it's a blessing all around. So that's all I had. I hope that's enough for discussion, because like I said, I feel like we could talk for hours about this stuff. Mm-hmm.
With Elisa's permission.